Some days you're the Jokic. Some days you're the Embiid. We'll talk about the loss to the Sixers here on Locked On Nuggets.
You are Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On Nuggets, your daily Denver Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On Network. Thanks for joining us on a Saturday. Appreciate you guys being with us and making us your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, where you can join the show and join folks hanging out like Leo Clayman and Big Honey and Just Another Itch Guy and Dr. Koss. Lots of folks hanging out with us here on a Saturday, recapping the Nuggets. Probably most disappointing in terms of like expectation, belief, etc., stakes in a big picture narrative sense, loss of the season to the Philadelphia 76ers, 126-119. On today's show, we'll talk about the loss of the Sixers for two segments. We're going to talk about like our general takeaways. We'll get into some of the deeper stuff in terms of how the Nuggets played, matchups, some coaching stuff in the second segment. Third segment, we'll talk about what it means, both the MVP race and for the Nuggets going forward. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network. Glad to have you with us. Want to let you know that today's show is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network, joined by Adam Mares, who's just back from the DNVR postgame show. So he's talking a lot about what must be just a game that I would imagine just like, man, like that would be my that's what I imagine is your reaction. Not like devastated, just like, man, about this game in particular. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it feels devastating, not in the sense of like a playoff game is devastating when you lose or a playoff series, but it does just in terms of, here's what's funny. We're going to talk today a lot about the actual takeaways, which are like, if we were computer robots programmed to have the right take, which I would be like is, you know, bummer, slight bummer. But then there's the narrative takeaways, which I'm not trying to discount them as not real or what have you, like there's nothing wrong with them. But the narrative takeaways are going to be so enormous here. And I think they disguise the important basketball takeaways. But again, that's what's such a bummer about it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about this because I went to take my daughter to get a stuffed animal after the game because she's done really well in her reading. Good job, Isla. She doesn't listen to the show. But as I was doing that, I was thinking about like things about the specific nature of this matchup, right? It's like the Sixers present, much like the Nuggets do, honestly, in the West, the Sixers present a very specific combination that you have to be able to overcome. A dominant big man in Joel Embiid that can hit from mid-range when his jumper's falling like today. I talked about that on the show on Friday, about the importance of that. Having a guy like PJ Tucker that you can at least from whatever, you know, however effective it was, be able to say like, hey, let's have Embiid roam, save his energy, and let's give PJ Tucker the Jokic assignment. Having Harden and Maxey to attack in second units, having a guy like Tobias Harris, like the whole combination of things that they present and whether or not like there are things from this game that reveal weaknesses in the Denver Nuggets, because the Nuggets have weaknesses like every team does, but very few teams have the specific combination and play the way that they did. And all that said, all of that combined, the Nuggets win this game if they don't completely lose their minds from about the 2-minute mark of the third quarter on.
I mean, to me, this is all it. This is why I say, like, I see some sad sacks, just another itch, guys. So somebody leading into your itch. Usually the Serbs are more confident than this one. I'm kind of surprised by it. But this is the thing about, like, there's the emotional narrative part of feeling really bad. But to me, this entire game came down to the last minute and 59 seconds of the third quarter. Denver was up 15 points with 1 minute and 59 left and shooting a technical foul. Jamal Murray goes to the line. He misses it. Denver gets a turnover. Denver gets a couple of bad shots, a couple of turnovers, and they foul 60 feet from the basket. They foul Joel Embiid on a three-pointer at the buzzer, and Denver gives up a 12-0 run in 1 minute and 59 seconds. I think that a lot of what happened in this game, there's a couple big things to take away, but to me, like, Denver did a lot of things that are very, very positive. I think Jokic wasn't aggressive enough down the stretch. They put PJ Tucker on him. But the narrative part of this is we were very close, very, very close, 1 minute and 59 seconds, actually, away from Jokic dominates the first quarter. They have a good enough stretch in the third quarter to maintain a 15-point lead. Embiid gets pulled off of Jokic, which would have been a huge narrative boost the other way if Denver just pulls this game out. It's like, oh, my God, he was getting cooked in the first half. Denver had like a 160 offensive rating at halftime. Like, they were scoring every time down the court. So you have all of that. But when you give up a 12-0 run in 1 minute and 59 seconds, that's the game. Even with Embiid's hot shooting in the fourth quarter, even with the big plays that were made and Philadelphia shooting 51% from three, 12-0 run was the difference in this game. And it happened not because, in my opinion, of anything that Philadelphia did. Denver lost focus because they lost their lead. They regained it. And I think it was a sense of like, we survived the storm. We survived the punch. And then they fell apart.
When you face a team on the road that's this good, right, and they're down 15, if you allow a run like that going into the fourth, like, it's, you've allowed this wave to form, and now you have to, like, you've done all of the work to establish yourself, and now you have to withstand a team that now is, like, playing with urgency. I don't know how else to put this, so I gotta be real careful with this. We'll talk about in the second segment about how the Nuggets got out-coached. One way in which the Nuggets got out-coached in this game was that Doc Rivers put more into this game than I think I've ever seen him put into a regular season game. I thought Joel Embiid put more into this game than I've ever seen him put into a regular season game. Like, this was like a, this was one of those games where you go into a game on a Saturday and you're like, it's the regular season. And the other team was like, whatever we have to do to win this.
I think Denver had that approach, though, Matt. I mean, honestly, the first half, if we just take away those last 2 minutes of the third quarter, the first two quarters, I thought Denver played great basketball, and you should be encouraged by how great they played. Some of this is Denver consistently, and Jokic in particular, approaches the Joel Embiid matchup with don't get in foul trouble and keep him out of the paint. And he accomplished both of those goals. The risk is like, okay, you're going to give him the jumper. You're going to paw at it, but you're going to be playing off enough that he's lured into taking the jumper. And even if he hits those, if we look at the shot chart, by the way, for Joel Embiid tonight, he had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shots. He took 31. He had 7 shots inside the restricted area. He had another 5 shots that are like right at the edge of the paint. Everything else he took was from outside the paint. He ran hot tonight, and you have to tip your hat to him. 4 3-pointers, and they were all spectacular, every single one of them. A couple more mid-rangers. But again, nothing spirals off of that. You don't get offensive rebounds. You don't draw fouls and stop the game. And so I think Denver's gameplay, I honestly don't think they lost because of that. Embiid was spectacular. They lost because of that one stretch where it was turnovers and transition and backcourt fouling. But they could survive that game plan because nothing else was coming off of it.
I agree. And I agree with you that stretch of the third quarter was like the determining factor. I would also say, like, Nuggets had a 3-point lead when Jokic and Embiid enter in the fourth. Like, this was still a winnable game at that point. You know,
there's no question. I'm not trying to take anything away from Philadelphia or Embiid, who was spectacular in this game, thoroughly outplayed Jokic in the second half. I'm just saying the game plan, like, Denver's going to play Philly again in two months. I think the game plan is going to be the same because it's actually been the same game plan now, 3 or 4 matchups in a row. And that's provide that cushion, don't foul, and make him make jump shots. And even when he hits it, like, Embiid has actually had good games now against Jokic, 3 in a row. This is the only one they've won. And again, giving him the jumper, I think, is the right move.
I agree. I completely agree. Like, you live with it. You live with it. Like, you live with it. You tip your cap. Embiid played awesome. Like, that's how it goes. The other thing I would say is 2 stats people I talked to after the game, one that works in media and one that works for a team, both said the same thing about it, which is they were like, I mean, look, they shot 51% from three. Like, the Nuggets got caught with a bad shooting variance for the opponent, and one of the worst for the team did say now, like, Denver's been the team that has gotten those throughout the season, so it's like this is the variance you talk about, but they felt like that was a bigger thing than any of the tactical stuff that I felt was more important.
I agree with it, though. This is what I'm saying is in the first half, Denver got everything. It wasn't hot shooting. It was they were at the paint. They were at the line. They were in the mid-range. They were at the three-point line. Ball was popping. They were getting exactly what they want. And defensively, I even felt like they locked up in moments. You know, they picked their spots where their defense looked elite. Their rotations looked good. So that's why I say I think Denver looked good. The adjustment of putting P.J. Tucker on Jokic obviously disrupted them, and I think it disrupted Jokic in particular. There's some things we'll talk about, I know, a little bit later about that. I don't think that's like a long-term concern for Denver, but it's unfortunate that they didn't play better, and Jokic in particular didn't play better against it in the second half. But to me, I just look at this and I go, you played a team on the road that was really good. They shot 51%, and you outplayed them for all but 2 minutes of this game. I know there were other stretches where they.
Your mic came undone. And I'm going to take advantage of this situation to take a break, because we're going to take a break. We'll come back on the other side. We'll talk about the PJ Tucker adjustment. We'll talk about how the Sixers adjusted.
One, two, three.
There you're back. The rotation. We'll talk about a number of things. We'll get into more of the details of this game as well as the bench. And a big question that I've been kind of raising throughout the season that I think is coming to a head. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. But first, I need to tell you about FanDuel Sportsbook. FanDuel Sportsbook. The playoffs are here in the NFL. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On. They're the number one sportsbook in America, FanDuel. And if you're new to FanDuel, that's even better. They've got so many great features that make betting on sports fun and easy. New customers join today to get started with $150 in free bets guaranteed. You can roll those into an MVP ticket because you're likely to get a pair of price on Jokic tomorrow when you place your first $5 bet. Just sign up at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. FanDuel has all your favorite bets, from the money line to point spreads and player props. You can even combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. I got a nice teaser. You could still get it because the line moved back towards Kansas City. Take the 6 points on the Niners and the Bengals. Mahomes never covers, even healthy. He doesn't cover. Spreads over 3 at Arrowhead never does it, especially not versus Joe Burrow. And the Niners, I think their defense is just too good for the Eagles to be able to run away with it. So I've got a Niners-Bengals teaser for Sunday. Football fans, don't miss out. Place your $5 bet to get $150 in free bets, win or lose, at FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. We'll be right back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate you guys being with us. Whew, the comment section did not take this loss well. And unsurprising
news. As they shouldn't. This is the difference, Matt. You're not a Nuggets fan, and this is the one thing you're sometimes not empathetic to, is they should take it. This is why you watch sports if this one doesn't.
It isn't going to bother you. I totally understand. It's tough for me because my version of empathy is to be like, it really is kind of okay. Like, you right, know, because there's right, this whole like, I think the MVP was decided. And I'm just like, I find that laughable because I'm like, guys, recency bias is huge in the NFL or in the NBA. Like, if the Nuggets win the one in March and Jokic is the one that hits like a game winner.
But I'll tell you this, though. Embiid deserves to flip the MVP narrative. He played well enough and outplayed Jokic enough and hit the big shots in the clutch that he should have momentum now in the MVP conversation.
That's big of you. That's big of you to say.
It's not big of me. There is a lot of games left to be played, but I just like when people are like, I can't believe we're going to use this one game. It's like, I think you should. It's an important game, and he played great.
Yeah, he did. Absolutely. I mean, I don't ever get into individual matchups. That's not my approach, but I totally understand the feeling on it. So let's talk about some of the coaching stuff, because I want to get into that. Doc Rivers changed Joel Embiid's rotation for this game. I cannot get over this. Like, you heard me on this show all year being like, most coach, I'm like, Doc never changes it. Like, Doc, like sets it, and then, like, he'll make shifts when Tyrese Maxey comes back. He's coming off the bench. But, like, he is not, like, we're going to game plan specifically. And they literally were like, how can we get Embiid versus the bench unit? Which is a great tactical move. It just shows you, like, the investment level that I thought that they had today. And, you know, the Nuggets are like, I don't think it's wise to be like, oh, we're going to take Jokic out early to shadow Embiid. I don't think that's a good call. Maybe over the course of a playoff series. But I didn't think that that was necessarily like instructive. And to be honest, they only won the first stretch with Embiid on the floor versus the bench by 3. And I think the Nuggets won the Jokic versus non-Embiid minutes by bigger in that.
Yeah, but it was like 8 or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So like it didn't really pay off. But then in the second half, he makes a tactical adjustment and moves PJ Tucker onto Jokic and allows Embiid to roam. And like Ryan Blackburn was talking about this. I know you feel the same way. There are so many ways to counter that in terms of you space out Gordon, allow him to kick and drive. You basically play 5 out. You can run pick and roll with Gordon to get Jokic or Embiid involved in those situations and get Jamal Murray downhill. Like there's all these types of tactical adjustments, and the Nuggets simply didn't make them in this game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's a little bit of that. I want to say, because I'm going to agree with you and I want to go through all this. I don't want to absolve Jokic of, I still think Jokic is good enough that he needs to just punish that. And he needs to take over. like Tucker gets to be physical with him. There's a reason Tucker is such a good defender, is he can get away with like twice as much contact as anyone else. And Jokic was pissed about it. You could tell Michael Malone got a tech on his behalf, just trying to say like, hey man, what the hell are we allowing inside here that he just gets to put two hands on him as he's going to the basket. That being said, Jokic needs to be better at adjusting, but I'm with you in that I thought Denver seemed wholly unprepared for something they have seen before in the past. Rudy Gobert has been taken off of Jokic. Nurkic has been taken off of Jokic and used as a rim protector. Denver has an entire playbook of how do we attack that, and they didn't go to it. They stuck Aaron Gordon in the dunker spot, allowed Joel Embiid to play his favorite position, which is just stand there and wait for a drop-off pass or a shot to block, and it made things really easy. So I'm with you. I think all of the Nuggets seemed unprepared for something that should have been a little bit more obvious that it was going to happen.
So I want to ask this question. The presence of Gordon in the dunker spot, which is where he usually plays, and they're very effective there, with Embiid roaming, accounts for some of it. Joker has 7 shot attempts in the second half to Embiid's 14. You are the person that I trust most when it comes to analyzing Nikola Jokic. There is no one on the planet, including his teammates, that I trust more in terms of being able to illuminate to me things about Nikola. A lot of conversation about being aggressive here. A lot of conversations about what he should have done, how he should have attacked. Can you give me your perspective on the PJ Tucker matchup, what caused problems, and what, I don't like doing the blame thing. I think it's boring, but like how much responsibility does Jokic have for punishing that decision to put Tucker on him?
I think he deserves as much as anyone, just because I think that, again, as good as he is, he can make the best out of even bad situations. Even if you're not wholly prepared for that, I still think you can rise up and shoot over him. You can get a little bit closer to the basket to post up. I think it's hard. People were like, you needed to get down on the block. It's hard when you have a full-time help guy that's not having to guard Aaron Gordon in those moments. So, like, I'm a little empathetic about how hard it was to get down on the low block. But nonetheless, I think he could have scored. But that being said, Denver doesn't just score because they go to Jokic off a mismatch. There's a reason teams go to that, is because they feel comfortable saying, we're going to cut off all of your offense. This is what I'm saying about Denver with Joel Embiid and making him shoot jumpers, is they're saying, we'll die by this one choice because nothing else comes off of it. And I think just people saying, just go to Jokic in the post and you'll do this, even that I think would be a losing proposition. They needed to use Aaron Gordon, in my opinion, as a ball handler. They needed to get him away from the basket, even using him as a screener. And they needed Jamal Murray, in my opinion, to take better advantage of getting to run pick and roll with Nikola Jokic, with him not having a guard on him. That's the biggest advantage you have, is, oh, you're going to put this guy down on the block. Jamal Murray should be getting every shot that he wants in this one. And I just thought that he kind of got on his heels. He, more than anyone in that last 2-minute stretch, playing with the basketball, dribbling the air out of the ball for no reason, throwing grenades. I just thought so those are the things that I think Denver could have done to take advantage. But that doesn't absolve Jokic of the fact that 2 or 3 more baskets in this game would have been the difference.
The Nuggets lost this game by 7 points. The Sixers had an 11-point advantage in points off turnovers. Like,
telling you though, Matt, those were all in the third quarter. That advantage, I think 2 turnovers and a 60-foot foul. So, like, all of those are preventable baskets that they gave up in the last 2 minutes.
You're absolutely right. So, here's what comes in. 10 of their 22 came in the third quarter. Like, you're on point there. Let's talk about the bench for a little bit, because, like, anytime the starters are a negative, I'm always like, look, guys, we can have the bench conversation another time. The starters lost, and that, like, that's your starting point.
Were the starters negative today?
Oh, yeah. Like, they were
+5 for Gordon, +8 for MPJ, +5 for KCP. Jokic a -1, which comes down to free throws. It really
was. I apologize. I was basing that off of I posted the second half box score. And, like, it was wild. And now, like, the full game counts, right? Like, that first half definitely does count. Because in the first half, Joker was +18. MPJ was +22, right? Second half, it was really stark. The Jamal Murray was -24. Joker was -19. KCP was minus 13. MPJ and Gordon were minus 14. That was what I was thinking of. You're right that for the entire game, they were a positive. So that's totally fair because like the first half when they built the lead does matter. I got a couple takes on the bench, but the biggest one, I think the most important one right now is that I don't know the answer to this because I don't think that I can find out. I don't think I can ask enough questions to figure this out. And this is just like a question that I don't even think they'd be able to answer, honestly. I don't know if on the one side, the benefit of trading Jeff Green and playing Vlatko Čančar would outweigh whatever the hit is to the locker room and chemistry. But it's got to be close. It's got to be a discussion. And there's got to be like real meaningful conversation about it. And this is like, this is not an overreaction for me. I've been on this since the start of the season. And I've always been like, when they got Jeff Green, I was like, that's a great signing. He's going to make big plays in the playoffs for them. It's been 2 years since then. Jeff's 2 years older now. Like that matters at his age. And they need guys. That bench is so bad. You need as much effort play as possible. And I know that Vlatko Čančar is going to give great effort. And so I like this, people, the fans are going to act like this is a simple equation, which is like Jeff doesn't play well, so Jeff shouldn't play. This is the NBA. That's not how it works. I'm sorry. I have to deal with the reality of the situation. Like this is not college.
I don't think they're going to trade Jeff Green. Just for clarity, I don't think that's even an option to the team. Like I think Jeff Green is here to be a player, and I would be shocked if they look to move him. I don't know if Denver's really going to make a move at all at the deadline. But your point remains that one of the problems with Malone, and I've said this for years, and it was part of the reason, not the whole reason, but part of the reason Jeremy Grant was not happy here is the status quo, the veteran player who already has the spot, seems to be a thing Malone's just not willing to disrupt. And that is Jeff Green in this instance, where it's like, is he better than the other options? You mentioned Vlatko Čančar. It could have been Christian Brown. Like you need, he's big enough that he has to, you're matching up with Thybulle and Tobias Harris and guys that I don't think Christian Brown's actually too small for. But either way, whether it's Vlatko or Brown, this was a game that I thought Denver got up for to a man. Like I thought everybody early on in this game had an intensity to him, except for Jeff Green. Somehow grabs one rebound in 19 minutes, and there were four or five that were right, hit his fingertips if he would have just given a half effort. So I'm with you on that one, where of all the guys, he's the only one to me that I was sort of like disappointed in from start to finish, where it just seemed like he didn't have the sense of urgency the rest of the team had.
Yeah, and so my only thing is if it's like, because this is not a guess on my part. The decision to play the veterans is not solely a Malone thing. Like there's the locker room has confidence in the veterans. Right. So like that plays a role in this. And the front office at times.
Ziegler played 10 minutes and his minutes were very shaky today himself. Like he hustled. He made hustle plays.
He really?
What's that?
You didn't like these minutes? I thought Zeke was great
He made hustle plays. He had like the tip in, he had this or that, but he also had just some like getting absolutely destroyed. I mean, it's Joel Embiid, but he had some plays where it was
that's the key is like, I love Zeke in all of the non Embiid minutes. Right. Yeah. Like, and this is where, again, like that disruption of rotation with Embiid playing there. If this is a series, you'd have to figure out what you're going to do there. I don't know what the answer is, whether it's the shadow Jokic or, you know, play DeAndre or whatever. I don't think DeAndre is going to help because Harden's going to tear him to pieces and Maxey will too. But like this is like part of the equation. I'm not going to expect Zeke. Like I can't expect Zeke to be successful against Embiid.
You just used the word trust. And I'm just pointing out that he only played 10 minutes tonight. Like when you were talking about trust, and that's the thing is Zeke Nagy, again, I don't think he was bad. I thought he made some hustle plays. But it's very clear that he wasn't trusted to be a major piece of this game.
Yeah. Bones. You have thoughts on Bones?
He needs to make his shots. I believe he was on the court for that 2-minute stretch. That was a disaster. And I believe he was at the forefront of one or two of those plays where it was – some of this was just turnovers, playing in transition, whatever. But some of it was – you just need to make things tough on guys. You can't give up the easy stuff. And there was a bunch of easy stuff that was given up in that stretch where it's like, that's how you get 12 over. You can survive. Oh, they hit tough shots over a 4-minute span because we played good defense and they just made tough ones. You can't afford a 12-0 run where 10 of the points were easy.
Bones exists in a duality for me right now because I've been thinking a lot about this. I don't expect Bones to be better than he is right now because the things that he's struggling at are things that most point guards struggle so much at this point in their careers. And you've made this point a lot with how the offense is structured. Like, one thing that clicked for me was he has nothing to make what is already a difficult learning process easy on him. So, like, over the next 5 years, I think Bones is going to be fine. I don't have questions about, like, is Bones Hyland going to be an NBA player? Is Bones Hyland going to be a rotation player? Is Bones Hyland going to be, like, a plus player worthy of money in 5 years? I have no question about that based off of his skill level. In the moment, in the very near term, in the next 4 months of basketball, right? In the next 6 months of basketball, the Nuggets are hoping to play 5 months. He's a real issue and he's a liability because he's not able to do a lot of those things that they need someone to be able to do. And they have to give him the chance to learn it, but it hurts them really badly in a lot of these moments at the same time. And so, like, I have all the confidence in the world. I really do. I think, like, all the stuff that you've talked about with Bones Highland's individual skill offensively is very true. He's just in a really difficult position right now and not in a position to comfortably ease into learning all of the stuff that he's going to have to learn over the next 4 years through repetition and trial and error running point guard in the NBA.
I think it's every player of his mold. Like, honestly, here's an interesting cop I was talking to somebody about. Darius Garland, fourth year in the NBA, finally on a winning team. Some of that not his fault. But, like, these guys need a long runway. Smaller, quicker, twitchier guards that have a wide skill set, but there's, like, so much to learn. The runway is just so long for them. So I think Bones, to me, looks as good as a Darius Garland. I think Darius Garland is a great player. I think he can be that caliber of a player, but it's just so rare for that caliber of player to be in a situation like this. And I think it's a tough spot for him to be in. That being said, first year, second year, third year, like, Denver's almost done with the part of the Bones runway where it's, like, hard. And that's why it's interesting to think about, like, trade or not to trade. Like, he's a really good player. And I do think that his learning curve will be steep between now and, let's say, 100 games from now.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about what this game means for the Nuggets. Obviously, what it means for the MVP race. We already talked about that a little bit. We'll talk about that a little bit more, and we'll wrap up our discussion on this game versus the Sixers. We'll do that when we come back on Locked On Nuggets. Back here on Locked On Nuggets, thanks for joining us, making us part of your day. Appreciate you guys joining us over the weekend. CT, captain of the Play All the Young Guys, Kill All the Old Guys crew, is in the chat section. He says, how much better would the bench look if Vlacco and Brown were swapped for Jeff and Bones, in your guys' opinion?
I think it would look better.
I still have a lot of concerns about having a lead ball handler. I don't know if I'd, like, believe Bruce Brown can run.
It's Jamal. They're not really playing all bench lineups anymore. It's usually Jamal out there.
That's true. Like, can you get away with, like, I think part of it that though is, like, is injury is the concern I would have there. Right. So, like, let's say it's the first round and you're facing the Wolves. Okay. And Bruce gets hurt and now you're down to just Jamal. KCP, like, they don't have another lead ball handler in that situation, right? Like,
so. I mean, I don't know that you worry about that now. If that's your best bet, you kind of build towards it. I think here's the problem with Jeff Green, because he has some talent. I think he slows the game down for Denver in a way that's not helpful. I think that's part of it, is he's most valuable as this, like, one-on-one scorer, which Denver needed sometimes when they were playing spread pick and roll and the ball would get stuck in Bones' hands. You almost needed all right, let's change it up. But I just think he slows things down overall, doesn't really rebound all that well. And more than anything, you probably just need hustlers. You need guys that just make extra plays. And he's kind of, for all of the things he's really good at, that's just not one that he ever brings to the table.
You're not worried about I agree with you on Jeff on all these counts, by the way. Like, I just honestly think that Jeff needs to be a break glass in case of emergency player. Like, he just needs to be transitioned.
The way DeAndre has been transitioned into, like, a, hey, there's certain times we need him, but not the default guy.
And, like, if you got to get through those minutes, you can get through those minutes. But, yeah, not the default guy, I think is a good way to phrase it. I will say I do think you have to have a mind for injury. Like, you have to have a mind for injury in these situations. But I guess, like, if you just swap them out, you still have Bones if you need a lead ball handler. And you still have Jeff if Vlatko were to say get hurt, you would still have those guys able to play. But like, yeah, like, do I think it would help? The bench really is a kind of a mystery where so many different combinations seem to lose. It's kind of mystifying, honestly, that it's as bad as it is. And even then, like, I would say, like, today they actually did okay in that first half and really in the second half. Like, that, I didn't think, like, that end of, they lost it right at the tail end of that second stint in the fourth quarter. And this is like how it always goes, where it's like, Malone's always just trying to buy like another 2 minutes, and it's always that 2 minutes that kills them. Feels like.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some big picture stuff. So the Nuggets now are 0-3 versus Celtics, Bucks, and Sixers on
the road.
They beat
the Celtics. Oh, on the road.
Yeah. Bucks, you know, obviously.
Is that a stat that means something, though? Is that a stat that means something? They didn't play any of their guys against the Bucks. They played the Celtics in the second week of the season.
No, just hear me out. Because this is what I said. They've proven that they can dominate teams at home, and they can dominate great teams at home, and they've proven they can get wins on the road. I think there's been, you know, the Warriors early season one is one. But, like, you know me. You know I care about these games the least, right? Eastern Conference above 500 on the road. This is literally, like, the least – I said this on Friday. This is the least important game. But if you're trying to build – like, if you're looking towards the playoffs – like, you do, and I'll say this more in a macro sense than a micro one with the Nuggets. There are so many teams right now that cannot win on the fucking road. The Memphis Grizzlies are one of them. The Golden State Warriors are another. So the Nuggets are in good company in the Western Conference, but that doesn't change the fact that, like, that's the only thing I can really kind of pull from this is, from a team level, is you need to be able to show, not need, it would be good to be able to show that you can go in versus a marquee opponent that got up for the game. You said, like, they got up for the game too. You're on the road. Like, them losing their composure in the manner that they did, it's not like a re-evaluation mark. It's just like a data point. It's just like, hey, this happened. Let's see what happens over the course of the season. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I just throw those stats out, though, personally. Like, the loss to Milwaukee being part of it is like, sure. Okay.
I only brought it up based off of,
they don't, like, they don't get credit for it, but it's not a debit.
Yeah, no. Me. The only reason I brought it up, Adam, is just based off of, like, that's the third best team in the East. That's it. Have they played the Nets in Brooklyn yet?
I don't know. They play the Nets twice at the end of the year for some. They're the Nets got a little bit of that schedule anomaly with Denver.
And then, like, the Cavaliers, and, like, that's really the only teams I think that really matter in the East. So, but again, like, Eastern Conference, it's not really about East teams. I'm not really trying to say that. I'm more just trying to say, like, what is their overall record versus good teams on the road? And never going to be great. No team, I'll put it this way, like, if you have a great record versus great teams on the road, you're probably going to win 60-plus games.
Here's what I'll say, though. This game tonight, to me, is discouraging because they lost, but it's, like, encouraging to me in how they played. I thought that they played really good defense in this game.
They were awesome for three quarters of this game.
Yeah, they ran into an adjustment that kind of really tripped them up, and then, you know, a really hot shooting, and you tip your hat in those games. But to me, I walk away from this game, big picture, just kind of like, okay, Denver still looks like a team that's close. Jamal did actually take a couple hits. One reason I think you could be a little bit soft on Jamal is he was questionable coming into this game. He was a game time decision. We didn't find out he was playing until 30 minutes before, so you know he was banged up. He took a hard fall on his elbow right at the start of the game. And then he took a knee-to-knee from Tybull that looked pretty painful on his, you know, rehabbed knee. So it's possible he just – part of why maybe he didn't have it at the end of this game was because he physically didn't have it.
You mentioned this earlier. I think it's totally fair for the MVP market to move on this. Like, there was conversation about how MVP – like, this may have literally flipped the MVP race. I'm okay with that. Like, that's totally fine. Yeah. I would strongly recommend buying Joker if that's the case, because, like, recency bias is a real thing. This is a data point, but if you're using This is the problem with the anecdotal stuff, right? Of being like, well, I remember this game. Like, this game was really impactful. You're not going to remember this game as clearly in 3 months as you do right now.
Right. Not just so, that. Like, I will say this. This is the, like, homer part of me, because I want to give credit to Embiid, who played great, outplayed it, deserved it, all of this. I don't think this game was as lopsided as people think. If you scored this quarter by quarter, Jokic outplayed him in the first, Jokic outplayed him in the second. I thought they were Embiid's slight outplay in the third quarter, but Denver, minus that last little stretch, Denver actually maintained their lead through that entire quarter. So they survived the blow. It was the fourth quarter. He made all of his jumpers, and it was a big one. But again, if Denver wins this game, if everything else goes the same, Denver doesn't have that third quarter stretch and they win this game, we're having an equal narrative of, hey, Joel Embiid made shots, but he didn't make the winning plays, and they took him off Jokic in this part. So, again, I agree with you. He did dominate the game. He did make the shots. But I think it's still going to be the narrative part of this is going to run – the narrative part of this, I think, is going to trick some people.
Here's the biggest thing. Like, second half, they had a 100 offensive rating with Joker on the floor. Okay? So – a lot of this gets into, from my perspective, it's Embiid was scoring early. Joker made his team better.
Right.
Embiid was still scoring. Joker was still making his team better. Like, making his team better. The Nuggets were better all over. They were better all over when Embiid, like, and it was by a pretty significant margin. And then they got real sloppy in that third quarter. Like, I didn't think the entire third, like, you're right, that they kind of survived it until that last 2 minutes.
They survived it. And then they punched back and they had a nice little run to push it back to 15. Yep. And they had a free throw to push it to 16 that Jamal missed. And it started a cascade of things that just broke.
And then, and so it's like the only way that the tactic of Embiid's going to hit all these shots and win this game on his own is if you open the door for him to do so. And the Nuggets open the door for it with that.
He's a great player. Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think he probably deserved to be higher in the conversation even coming into tonight. And personally, I think he probably deserves to be the leader, the favorite of it right now after this game. One question I have for you. They threw size at Jamal Murray in this game in the second half. They put Tobias Harris on him. They put Tybull on him. Jamal was banged up, maybe this or that, maybe there's other things going on, but just, do you feel like, was there anything that stood out to you about that?
He is still, I think, real hesitant on some of these. It's not every game, but he is not just like every night automatically kill. It's just, he does get hesitant, especially I'll say in the second unit, like a lot of the over dribbling by both guards is, like with Bones, I do feel a lot of the time that it's choice, but there's a lot of times when it just genuinely is like they don't know what to do because nobody's causing any gravity, any motion. They don't have an identity, anything. But like when he's matched up with size, we've seen this before, and it's like not surprising. Like if you're trying to combat any good guard, you want to put size on him. That's the best way to combat him, is like trying to find anyone with lateral speed to keep up with great guards. It's just Alex Caruso and Jrue Holiday.
Right.
So like it's hard to find, you know, if you got that matchup, you do it. One thing I will say is like, the hell did MBJ go in this game? Because like, you know, and maybe he was winded because he's been out for a little bit. That's totally understandable given what he's been going through. Like, this is not an MPJ thing. I'm just like, this is where it would have been great to, because you saw what Tobias Harris was able to do. Like, this would be great to have MPJ being able to create his own offense and take pressure off of everybody by being like, MPJ went off and that was the difference maker. Cause I thought MPJ was playing awesome to start this game. I thought that he played really well in this game.
Yeah. Oh, MPJ. And he's looking more athletic. He's looking healthier. That's another encouraging thing, is you got him back. And I actually thought he had a good game.
So, all right, let's go wrap it up for Locked On Nuggets for Saturday. It's just 1 of 82. We'll see where they go from here. Nuggets will practice on Monday and then they're back home.
Do they not play Monday? Is it not till Tuesday that they play? I thought they played Monday. Let me make sure you're right. Yep, you are right. Tuesday. So they do get a little day break here.
Who are they playing? Is it the Pelicans?
New Orleans. They got New Orleans, and then they got Golden State. Tuesday, Thursday this week.
Yeah, so, you know, back at home, we'll see what they can do. And I would imagine this is probably not going to, like, I will say this. I think that this game sticks with the Nuggets for a fraction of the time that sticks with the fan base. And that's okay. Like, the fan base, like, they got up for this. Both fan bases really got up for this game today. Like, this was a marquee matchup. It's okay. I am not trying to be like, you shouldn't care. That's stupid. No, like, it was a big game. You lost. It sucks. It's okay to feel bad. It's just I'm always like, let it stop there. Don't be like, and you should fire Malone and trade Jamal Murray to the
side. I'd love to see Denver pick up these two wins, though. You get a little bit of 2.5 days off leading into the Tuesday game, that a little break, a little breather. New Orleans shorthanded. It's also a game that can push them further down, basically wrap up a top three seed in the West if you get the win. And then Golden State, you know, it's just, that's a good test. Warriors are a tough team.
Yeah, and then one should be a great game, even though the Warriors, by the way, are still trash. We'll see how that one goes. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of it. We'll see you back again Monday with another edition